Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, the World Bank's Mikhail Rutkowski on reimagining social protection for the growing number of people working off the grid.
70% of world population are in the informal labor market. They do not have any formal employment contracts. And there are countries such as India, Bangladesh, or Nigeria where this number is above 90%.
The changing nature of work is turning traditional employment on its head and leaving workers exposed. Technological advances and greater global economic integration are challenging the effectiveness of old social insurance policies and benefits packages that are tied to stable employment contracts. Mikhail Rutkowski is Senior Director for Social Protection and Jobs at the World Bank Group and helped produce the 2019 World Development Report on the Future of Work. Rutkowski is also author of Reimagining Social Protection, an article featured in the December 2018 edition of Finance and Development magazine.
So why is it that these social insurance policies that people have come to expect from their employers and governments, why are they becoming so elusive for most workers now?
Well, they have always been elusive. If you look at the poorest countries in the world, this is less than 20% that get any social protection, typically in the form of conditional or unconditional cash transfers. And what we see is that the expansion of social safety net or social protection in the developing world, even though it is moving forward, it's moving forward very slowly, which is directly linked to the lack of progress in the area of formalization of labor markets. But a new phenomenon, which we've observed certainly in the 21st century, is the fact that the standard employment contract is becoming less and less relevant across the world, including in most developed economies, whereas the gig work, platform-based work, part-time work, going out of the labor market, working as a contractor, all those forms of work, non-standard forms of work, are on the rise. As typically social protection system used to be directly linked to standard employment contract, we have a sort of demise of social protection as traditionally understood, which is a direct consequence of the slow demise of the standard employment contract.
So when you say the gig economy, you're talking about technology, right? I mean, jobs that are related to advancements in technology. But this has been going on for quite some time. And why is it taking so long for the system to adapt to this new work environment?
It is actually growing very, very fast, but the numbers are still slow. If you look across the world, it's around 3% of the population that work in so-called gig economy, which is, as you rightly pointed out, it's technologically enabled forms of work through digital platforms. We have not found yet a form of social protection that would be appropriate for this type of workers. They do not have a traditional type of social protection, and new forms are emerging very slowly. The World Development Report 2019 from the World Bank on the changing nature of work makes a big point that social protection needs to be enhanced. And what is critical is to enhance those forms of social protection that are not linked to standard employment contracts. That applies both to social assistance, which is a last resort form of help to the poorest and most vulnerable, but it also applies to social insurance, of which we typically think that it is directly linked to work, that these are payroll contributions made, which are then collected when the contingency being either disability or old age, appears. What we argue in the World Development Report is that we need to reimagine the way social protection is thought of by allowing people who are in non-standard employment contracts to be able to be covered both by social assistance if needed, but also by social insurance, which means that they could contribute against their needs in old age or against their needs if they need long-term care or if they become disabled. And that is indeed moving forward very, very slowly. Mm.
So, yes, you know, technology has or is in the process of transforming the workplace, the nature of work, but people continue to work. I mean, it's not like they're losing their jobs. Why is it that they're unable to continue to pay into these social insurance policies on their own? I mean, why is the system so hung up on this payroll deduction model?
The system has been hung up on the payroll deduction model in that part of the world that was strongly influenced by Bismarckian tradition of Bismarck, because the model which Bismarck started was a model in which in order to cover somebody by social insurance, you need contributions both from employers and employees. That form of social insurance has become extremely popular in a part of the world, especially in continental Europe. And what has not developed in parallel are forms of social insurance that are independent of being in this relationship with the employer. And this is what is now happening. We see an increasing popularity of new social insurance schemes for freelancers, for those who are indeed, in those new forms of work, but the infrastructure is not there, the tradition is not there, there is not yet enough people in those relations to create social pressure on setting up those systems faster. But interestingly, technology helps us a lot. And in the current world, with the current technological developments, it is not anymore a technological problem to set up a system like that. We could easily monitor payroll deductions or contributions that are not payroll related. But infrastructure is moving very slowly. There are parts of the world in which it is happening faster and it probably will be easier because Bismarckian tradition was never a main form of social insurance, for instance, in Australia, New Zealand, or in Scandinavian countries, where social insurance was essentially not based on payroll, was based on general revenue. And this is absolutely the right way to go. Basing social insurance of payroll, which is a Bismarckian tradition, in addition to the fact that it was linking social insurance to standard employment contract, was also taxing one factor of production, so to speak, more than others, that is labor. So it was, in fact, I would argue, quite anti-labor. What is essential in a new social insurance systems that are consistent with technological developments, which a future world of work, is to use the broadest possible tax base to finance social insurance, not just a payroll. This is clearly a direction of travel.
So how many people work in the informal sector? I mean, who are working completely off the grid and who've never experienced these social protections themselves, the social protections that we're talking about. And I assume that this model that you just described is not possible in countries where most of the work is informal.
So 70% of world population are in the informal labor market. They do not have any formal employment contracts. And that obviously differs across countries. There are countries such as India, Bangladesh, or Nigeria, where this number is above 90%.
Wow.
Meaning formal labor market essentially touches less than 10% of the population. And then there are countries like US, Western Europe, when 97% are informal relations or even 98%. But that is slowly falling because of the gig economy. Now, what is happening, and it is potentially revolutionary, that rather than thinking about how to formalize this 70%, how to get them onto some kind of formal labor relationship. We thought like that for many, many years, and there has been no progress whatsoever. Instead, what we need to think about is how to allow those who remain informal to have various forms of social protection. Mm. We need to reach them out through cash benefits, conditional or unconditional, and then we need to find mechanisms in which they can also get social insurance. And what we observe is that the revolution in terms of mobile money, the revolution in terms of ability to monitor banks and non-banks transactions allows us suddenly to use their transaction, their consumption as a base for social insurance contribution. And this could be done in a very smart way through auto-enrollment, through behavioral nudges. We see serious attempts to do that in a direct benefit transfer system in India. We see pension systems created in Benin, in Ghana, that precisely follow that rule that those who are in informal arrangements, they have an option to have make small contributions to their pension. The default is that they actually do make this contribution, but they are informed about it. They can, of course, opt out. But we know from behavioral economics how huge is the power of defaults. And this is a smart system, this is a voluntary system, but that produces the effect that informal sector workers have both social assistance and social insurance. And that's the direction to go.
Well, it's very interesting. But I assume that there's another challenge in that it's data. Like, how much do we really know about the people that are in these informal economies, and how could we expect to provide any form of safety net if we don't have the data that identifies and locates those people who need it the most?
I am so happy you raised this topic, because we observe, in addition to mobile money, in addition to gig economy, we observe another revolution which is underway, which we call in the World Bank ID4D, Identification for Development. Probably the best example of the revolution is India, with their Aadhaar system that allows now for more than 1 billion people to have a unified identity number. Those people are identified by 12-digit number. This is a revolution, because with every transaction they make, with every type of consumption they make, this number is registered. So those folks are identified. And this identification could be used, in fact, was created in order to be used also for the purpose of targeted social safety nets, also for the purpose for identifying individuals who make those transactions and therefore make social insurance contributions if the system is there. That Aadhaar approach spreads very quickly around the world. In the World Bank, we are involved very closely in actually having projects in which help countries to build unified identity numbers. And the biggest one at the moment, and the regional one, covers the whole of West Africa, because we would like those identity numbers to be fungible across countries, to be used across countries, because we are also having an increasing migration, unfortunately also forced displacement. So it is very important that they are recognized across countries. So we are getting that very, very quickly, and our ability to target, identify individuals would really bolster our ability to cover informal sector people with social protection.
Is this similar to the social security numbers that we use in advanced economies?
It is very much based on this, except that it is digital and biometric. So you don't need a piece of paper. Here in the US, I remember for many, many years, I was asked to show the social security card. In India, nobody would ask this question. It's such an old-fashioned question. Mm. So yes, absolutely. The point is that, and actually, an interesting issue about leapfrogging here. Many developed countries have multiple identification number. US is actually quite okay. Social security number was really the base. But there are countries that have 3-4 different identity numbers for different purposes, and often paper-based. And for them, it was very difficult to decide in the first place which one should be the universal one. Whereas it was easy to decide for India, because they didn't have anything in the first place.
So you bring up leapfrogging. So leapfrogging is a term that's used when governments can skip expensive steps in their development, like provide cellular service rather than installing landlines. But in this article that you wrote for Finance and Development magazine, you refer to an opportunity that developing countries may have to leapfrog, and these are your words, outdated industrial-era social protection policies. Why do low-income countries or developing countries have an advantage in that regard?
they would have an advantage in this regard primarily because they did not develop an infrastructure to support systems that are based on working for one employer over lifetime and with no change in the status. They never developed it because they never had that form of employment, so they can directly travel to the system which is based on individuals enrolling themselves in social insurance systems through the mechanisms I described earlier, through contributions based on their transactions, and benefit from newly built infrastructure already in a digital era and for that purpose. For developed countries, this will be a bit more difficult because there is both an infrastructure dependence and psychological dependence on the systems that are both that are based on standard employment and on old employers. So in this sense, both developing emerging economies and developed economies travel to the same place, but it is not entirely clear that this distance is lower for developed countries. It may well be that it will be lower for developing countries. There is a 21st century brings actually a very interesting perspective, very interesting possibility, which is that those forms of work in the developing world and developed world will be more and more similar to each other, whereas we used to think that this will be emerging economies that will be traveling in the direction of developed world, whereas no, this may, in a way, it is the opposite way. This is developed world through gig economy and through the fact that standard employment contract loses importance is traveling towards where the emerging economies already are or are also moving, and they can converge in one place.
It's fascinating. Thank you so much.
All pleasure is mine. Thank you very much.
Michał Rutkowski is Senior Director of Social Protection and Jobs at the World Bank Group and author of Reimagining Social Protection, featured in the December 2018 edition of Finance and Development magazine. Go to imf.org/FND to find the magazine online or download the Finance and Development app to read it on your mobile device. And if you like this podcast, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter @IMF_podcast.